Joining me on the line, Jake Shepherd. He's a director and founder at Synthesis. How are you, Jake?
Interesting times.
Good morning. We've just had a social media report, which I have to say was very negative. What do you think, Zanati?
Hey, yeah, no, it was.
I actually feel like I need alcohol.
I've got one bottle of wine left, so I think.
And
I'm
you can't even go and buy more.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's a problem. Jake, there is so much negativity coming our way, and it is very difficult to keep batting it away all the time, because sometimes we're better equipped to do that, and sometimes we're not. What are your thoughts about dealing with the negativity, especially during lockdown?
Sure. First of all, I just want to acknowledge the fact that we're pretty much in a state of chaos at the moment. Certainly a scenario which is incredibly anxiety producing. And the reason is obvious, because we're uncertain about the future. Many people are saying, well, is my job secure? Will the economy recover? And if it does recover, what's going to look like? You're asking questions about, will I or my family become infected? And you've really been thrown into a state of unexplored territory where your normal day-to-day, what you expect to happen, isn't happening, and you're in a pretty difficult situation. And I think we just need to recognize the fact that we're going to see increased and higher levels of anxiety. And obviously, commensurate with that, people are going to start having to deal with depression and things, you know, where that leads to. And also relationships come under a lot of strain as well during this time. And I think we've spoken about some of these things in the past, but I think what's happened now is it's become very, very real, where we've all been thrown to the state of chaos and we're all experiencing this.
So would you agree with this? I spoke with a journalist from the Sunday Times yesterday, and he was telling me about what different companies are doing around this, but he said the overwhelming feeling from different companies is when the health crisis around COVID-19 passes us, the next crisis is going to be mental health crisis.
It resonates with me, and it's certainly something that I would be I'm totally aware of in terms of our staff and what it's doing to them, but also just generally in the community, obviously the Jewish community, but the broader South African community and how that's affecting them. And maybe what I thought would be quite a good idea is just to try and talk about some of the coping mechanisms.
Brilliant.
That we could use to try and deal with these levels of anxiety. So what I'd suggest, is to try and actually take control a little bit, and let's do it through three different ways of trying to cope. One is actually action, do stuff, move. Because remember, to a large extent, we're feeling paralyzed, we're feeling helpless. So we need to be able to get over that and start to do stuff. And there's you're dealing with this indecision, what do I do next? And there's a famous saying by G.K. Chesterton, anything worth doing is worth doing badly. So just start. Just start doing stuff. Even if it means that you're going to do it badly, don't worry about the fact that, well, is this the right thing that I'm doing? Is it the right way of doing things? Just work out that's what I'm going to do and start doing it. And just by doing it, you just start having some impetus. You start moving forward. You're going to start having a lot of more positive in terms of dopamine levels and other ways that your body actually reacts. When you start moving forward, your body starts actually, so to speak, self-medicating, and it starts improving your mood. So that's really important. Just start doing it. Even if you're going to make a little bit of a mess of things, you'll improve it later, but start making decisions and start acting. And I think that's a very positive coping mechanism.
Absolutely. So number one is just do it.
And I feel like this is the perfect time for you to make a mess of anything, really, because we're all in a state of chaos. So it's
go
okay.
on and make a mess, but just do it. Yeah. I love that, actually.
Yeah. And then I think the second thing is, you know, just acknowledge your feelings, and about yourself and actually forgive yourself. You know, I think a lot of us are thinking like what I'm doing is wrong and I'm worried the whole time and I'm feeling so bad. And imagine if you had a friend, okay, let's put them in quotation marks, who constantly pointed out everything that you're doing and how wrong it was, and everything that with your life that's wrong. You know, how would you react to that friend? Well, I know that I'd unfriend them and they said, mm-hmm. get out of my life. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to acknowledge that we're that friend to ourselves. We often actually are our own worst enemy. And I think we need to start being a little bit more kind to ourselves mm-hmm. and having a little bit more compassion to ourselves. And certainly in the situation that we're finding ourselves in.
Mm-hmm. And then another
coping mechanism, which I think is tremendously useful, is it's so important to have purpose and meaning in your life. And obviously, this is like Viktor Frankl, this is the core, you know, man's search for meaning. This is the core of what he felt is necessary to have a healthy life. And I suppose just look around and recognize all the people who need us. And we need to actually feel that we're needed, we've got something to contribute, and think about other people at this time. What can we do to actually reach out and make other people's lives a little bit easier? And I think by doing that and serving others, we actually gain a lot of meaning for our souls and in our life as well. And I think that's really important. So actually try and work out what is my purpose and meaning in life, and how can I serve it, and how can I actually serve other people as well at the same time? Because the two are inextricably linked. And I know my wife said that there are people in our road and the WhatsApp group who are reaching out and just saying, if there's anybody in the street who needs someone to go to the shops for them, I'm happy to go to the shops for them. Just think about other people at this time. How can you reach out, even if it's just to acknowledge them and say hello?
Yeah, because I think the minute we step out of ourselves, I don't know what it is. What is it about that, Jake, that we, you know, that is it because that we don't become so self-absorbed and only seeing our own negativity? What do you think that's about?
My personal feeling is that we're wired as social creatures. We're not necessarily wired as selfish creatures. And when we acknowledge that and we actually play into that, we actually can, it's a truer reflection of who we really ought to be. And I think that also, it's our body, so to speak, rewards us when we start acting in the way we're supposed to be. When we start doing, I suppose, what life calls on us to do, we start resonating a lot more with that, and it's actually a lot more positive in terms of our well-being and dealing with our stress and anxiety. You know, you've got that famous saying by Friedrich Nietzsche, you know, he who has a why can bear almost anyhow. And I think that's what it is. It's trying to find that meaning and purpose in your life. And part of that is certainly serving others and seeing how you can make it everyone else's life a little easier. And that's part of it.
So carry on.
That's the one area. That's trying to look at inward and say, well, how do I solve my levels of anxiety? But there's another aspect of the situation that we need to acknowledge, which is like we're really boxed in with a whole bunch of people, and we don't get a lot of chance to like get out there and create that distance that we've always had in the past. You know, you go to work and you're not with your wife for 8 hours, and then you come back and you're not with your kids for a bit of time. So this whole cadence of has been thrown out, and now all of a sudden you're boxed up in one tiny house with all these people around you, and you can't really escape. And I think what we need to just recognize is the fact that we're going to have conflict as an inevitable result of that. And that's just, we always have conflict, but I think the difference is our coping strategies, or our strategy to actually just create a bit of distance and a bit of time to think, that's not really there as much. And I wanted to maybe just talk through how I would try and address these sorts of conflict situations.
Yeah, because I want to keep wondering is sometimes conflict, there are times, and you and I have spoken about this many, many times, there are times that conflict is absolutely critical, and these are crucial conversations that people need to have in order to grow. But sometimes, and I'm finding this during lockdown, conflicts occur just because people are irritable. Do you think that all conflict needs to be addressed and resolved?
Yes and no. I mean, and often you can find that conflict, if you just a bit of space, can actually resolve the conflict, because then you'll just, you think about it and you realize that actually it's not such a big deal. I'm not going to make a big deal about it. I think what becomes difficult is when you're all boxed up together, often things that started off just as irritating can sometimes escalate a lot worse than that. Descend into shouting matches and calling people the worst things, and you actually want to take those sort of things back. And I think what I'd suggest in that sort of a situation is, first of all, when you're criticizing your partner, you're saying there's a problem, try and make it the smallest problem that there is. Don't catastrophize, not that you're the devil incarnate, but actually that thing that you did really irritates me. And I would suggest if you could just do it in the following way, it'll be a lot better.
If you don't do it in the following way, I am going to drown you in one of the guest bombs or something like that.
Exactly. But then I think the person who's been criticized, obviously, correctly speaking, I suppose, isn't particularly comfortable with that, because they've been told, listen, you're inadequate. You're wrong. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of stuff you got to fix, and fixing stuff, we don't like doing that as human beings typically. It's a lot of hard work, and there's a so what I would suggest in a situation where you get into a tough argument and you do see your partner as somebody that you just can't understand where they're coming from, and you just think they're overreacting and it's terrible, I think use the following strategy. The two of you go into separate rooms, calm down a little bit, but also just think about what is that one stupid thing that you did over the last 6 months that made this particular interaction inevitable. Well, how did you contribute to where we landed up today? And you'll find it. If you think honestly enough about it, you'll go back. Your partner's going through the same sort of process. What did they also do to contribute to the situation, to this argument, to this disagreement? And then basically apologize. Say to the person, listen, this is what I did 3 months ago. I think it actually relates to this, and I apologize for it. And I think that shifting of mind and not just always seeing the other person as the problem will help in that. And I think that's one way to try and address it. But there's another way, I suppose, in terms of arguments, which maybe aren't as heated. And in order to head them off so they don't even get into a state where it becomes heated, is to really acknowledge the fact that there's a good way to argue and a bad way to, let's have a disagreement. A good way to do it and a not so good way of doing it. And I would recommend the following as a good way of arguing. And that is to follow, your ABCs. So your A is first agree with the person. Most arguments actually are about specifics. Broadly, we agree, but there are a few specifics that we disagree on. And I think what we, as human beings, we tend to focus on those areas of disagreement. So I'm actually recommending that you don't start there. You start with what you agree with that person. So you say, listen, in terms of this point that you've mentioned, totally agree. It's obvious. And this point, also agree. Nice point. And then you can actually build, and you can then say, well, I don't know if you've actually thought of the following scenario, and this is the way I would see that scenario. So you're really building, so you start off agreeing on all the points that you have in common. Then you build and you actually say, I don't know if you thought of this, and this is the way I'd see it. And then you compare and contrast. So you don't say to the person, you're wrong, you're an idiot. You just say, listen.
Sometimes it's so nice to say that.
It's so nice to say that. But you can say, listen, in this case, this area here, I'm agreeing with you, but in this case here, this is how you see it, and then this is how I see it. So you compare and contrast the two, as opposed to calling the person a little bit of an idiot. And I think that's also a nice way of just trying to learn how to actually have disagreements. And one of the things that I thought would be really cool, and it was a YouTube video I saw quite recently, is just some tips on how to survive isolation. And somebody had the bright idea, and I think it actually was a very clever idea, of asking Natan Sharansky for his principles for surviving isolation.
Wow. Because, how many years was he in prison in Russia?
Look, he was In, the KGB had him in confinement for 9 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think even at one stage, there was like over 300 days without any contact, just in a dark little cell.
Yeah, without internet, without Twitter, yes, and Netflix. Without Twitter. Yeah.
Mm. And they asked him, like, what are your tips and your principles for getting through this difficult time of isolation? And clearly he's a good guy to ask this about. And he gave five tips or five principles, and I thought they were great. The one is, you know, the first principle was think, you know, of the bigger picture. So remind yourself that you're actually part of this global battle. Against this virus, and that your actions matter, your distancing matters, your taking responsibility or how you act in public and what and your decisions that you make matter. And I think that's really, there's a common enemy and we're part of this fight against this. And the second principle they said is focus on the things that are in your control and not the things that are outside of your control. So we don't really know how things are going to land up and how things are going to turn out. But what we can do, what is in our control, is we can reach out and help others. We could read a book. We could learn skills. We could learn a language. Anything that's in our control that we can do, let's try and do that. And then never, ever give up on your sense of humor. So you have a goal to make somebody laugh. Might even just be the goal to make yourself laugh. And I think that that's really important. And see if you can do that every day. And I saw a great little joke. Hopefully I can do that now. Related to this corona crisis, whoever said one person can't change the world never ate an undercooked bat.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you certainly shocked Zanati with that. Yes. So.
And then he said, keep it active. Like, don't give up on your hobbies, you know. And then the last thing he said is think of the group you are part of. Okay. And the fact that you're not going to feel the connection that you have to everybody around. And that, remember, you're not alone going through the situation. You're surrounded by a whole bunch of people on a similar journey. And right. Keep in contact and keep together.
Absolutely amazing. Time is 8:53. Ian says, I'm enjoying Jake's input and valuable suggestions. My rule of thumb is to seek alignment, not agreement necessarily, and to move forward. Ian, I think that's great. And Unsigned, and I'm not sure, Jake, if you have a suggestion as to how to deal with this. Unsigned says, I worry day in and day out if I'll still have my job after this. It works on my mind 24/7. And of course, that's very, very hard to deal with.
And I think that's every, you're not alone. I think there are so many people in that same situation. And I think, unfortunately, there's not a lot. It's one of those things that is to a large extent outside of your control. So the only way to try and get out of the constant seeing or the constant paralysis that anxiety and worry creates is to do those suggestions that I mentioned of trying to just like move to action. And trying to do stuff and try and move forward and make decisions and just do those little things. Forgive yourself and actually just reach out to others and try and make their life a bit easier. And those little things will help start lifting some of that worry so that you're not paralyzed by it all the time.
Absolutely right. Zanati, your thoughts before I let Jake go?
I do think just concentrate at the task at hand. I mean, I was pretty anxious. I mean, I lost a source of income because of COVID-19. But because I still have hope that it will come after this whole thing is over, I'm still doing stuff that will make me better at that thing
so
that I'm
going
to do.
Not losing sight of the goal. Exactly. Exactly what Jake is saying.
Every single day, you know, besides the work that I do, but I do stuff every single day that's going to make me prepare, that's going to prepare me for what is going to come, whether it comes or not. Yeah. But I feel like those skills will help me in some way or another. So just concentrating on the daily stuff that you do, I think that also curbs the anxiety.
Jake Shepherd, founder director at Synthesis. Thank you. As always, very, very interesting insights. Stay safe. Have a Shabbat Shalom. And we will chat to you soon.